Right now, I'd like to introduce Dave Waldrop. He's from the University of Tennessee in 1964. He did flight training at Laughlin Air Force Base. He did his Nellis 105 transition. In October 1966, he was at Yokota Air Force Base, and he volunteered in May of 67 to go to Tuckley to fly 45 missions. He flew 45 missions, and then he requested another tour, and he'll tell you why that it was that he thought that he should go over there. It has to do with the losses. And December of 1967, he completed his tour with 105 missions, 49 over Hanoi. His decorations are 3 silver stars, 3 DFCs, 12 air medals. He has 1 confirmed MiG-17 victory and 1 probable MiG-17 victory, and he ejected out of a 105, and he'll cover that later on. Dave Waldrop. And I might add here as an aside that I flew with Dave a number of times with Delta Airlines. I'm a Delta Airlines pilot. Dave is, and so is Dick. And I never knew he was a hero. He never mentioned it. Of course, I never asked. But I never knew he was a hero. And that's true. There were some other heroes that I flew with on the airline, World War II guys, Vietnam guys, and some Korea guys. They never said anything about it. You know, they were just doing their duty. They weren't going to let their buddies down. So anyway, Dick Diller, would Dick will come out, please. University of Oklahoma, 1963. He flew F-106s at the 95th Interceptor Squadron at Dover Air Force Base. Then he volunteered to go fly A-1s at NKP Royal Thai. I'll let you say what NKP is. I can't pronounce it. Royal Thai in Thailand. All missions were over Laos. They had people to protect them from keeping them out of Vietnam. He flew 203 missions, mostly at night, 633 hours of combat time. He has 1 DFC, 10 air medals. He spent 29 years with Delta Airlines. And Dave, you were 22, right? 32. Okay, 35. We're over 100. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay, guys. Okay, Dave, we'll start with you because that's what I said to start off with, right?
You're running the show.
Okay. You got the mic. You have to hold the mic up.
By the way, I certainly want to thank everyone to show the interest in some of the guys that have been there, done that, so to speak. I think it's neat that you all are showing up for these presentations. I've been here this week, and we've really had some fantastic crowds, which is neat. I just want to thank you.
We really appreciate you folks coming out. Tell us, what's it like to fly a 105?
Flying a 105 was the greatest experience a person can ever had. It was an airplane originally designed as a nuclear strike aircraft to be flown low level, single pilot, radar terrain avoidance, all weather. The airplane was extremely sophisticated. It was extremely fast. In fact, it was the fastest airplane in the world till the F-111 came along below 10,000 feet. And I sort of pushed that at one point, which I'll tell you about later. And it was an airplane in spite of its size, and this is what most people just can't comprehend. You probably, especially you that are pilots, you've probably heard people talk about you wear the airplane, you become part of it, and stuff like that. You generally wouldn't think of a big airplane that's some 60 feet long, 35 feet wide, that grosses about 53,000 pounds on takeoff. You wouldn't think of wearing that airplane. You'd think more of just flying the airplane. But once you got comfortable with the airplane, I did not even have to look inside at the instruments. I knew exactly where I was with that airplane. And it was because the airplane was so well balanced. And it was a terrific airplane in formation. And it would carry a lot of armament, and it would take a lot of abuse. And unfortunately, those poor airplanes, they got some abuse. We got The D model that I flew was a single seat version. They also had a two seat model, which was initially the trainer that people would check out. Actually, you wouldn't. That's not true. When you flew the F-105 the first time, you were sitting in the front seat by yourself, because in the back seat of the two-seat model, you couldn't see out. It was designed as the radar training version. So you'd go up two rides in the back seat with an instructor in the front, and you're in your own airplane, he's in his airplane, and you go out there and away you go. And so that was one of the greatest experiences for a young Brown Bar lieutenant you can ever imagine. But the airplane, it was just so solid, and it like I said, it would take all this abuse and still get you home. And I've got pictures at home of showing holes as big around as I am through the wing. One guy got hit with a ATOL, which is our version, or the North Vietnamese Soviet version of the Sidewinder. The thing actually went off, blew the back end of the engine, the tail feathers, turkey feathers, and for the afterburner and so forth, just blew them off. And the rocket motor actually embedded in the side of the airplane. He flew the thing home. So it was just a terrifically awesome airplane. But we had about 600 so D models, a single seater that I flew, and we lost half of them over Vietnam.
Dave, walk us through a typical mission and tell us about the restrictions of engagement, and you can even tell us what you think of it.
You've just opened up the door on that one, my friend. A typical mission, we actually had two missions. Like Sam mentioned, I had 49 over PAC-6. That's the Hanoi area especially. That was, in fact, when I finished at Karat, I had more missions over Hanoi than anybody at the base, and I really felt extremely lucky to get out of there with my ass intact. But typical mission would be one of two. We'd either have a Hanoi mission, or we would have one in the lower route packs. When you initially got there, you'd fly the lower route packs just to get combat experience, because it was not near as hostile. You didn't have the SAMs. You didn't have the MiGs. You did have FLAC, but it wasn't near as concentrated as Hanoi had. So you'd generally fly about 10 missions in the lower route packs, figure out and learn how to actually fly combat and what our tactics were, because everything's evolving naturally with any kind of war, just Vietnam, World War II, Korea, whatever. These tactics changed. So what I learned at Nellis when I went through the 105 program, it had been modified, and the different wings actually flew different profiles. So you'd go to the south part of North Vietnam. I never saw South Vietnam, by the way. I could not tell you a thing about it. I can give you a guided tour of Hanoi, but I cannot tell you a thing about South Vietnam, because that's the only place we flew was North Vietnam. You'd go to the lower route packs, and you'd learn to fly combat. You'd learn about the formations. You'd learn about the speeds and some of the jinking tactics that you used and so forth. But then to get to the serious missions, a typical Hanoi mission. No, first of all, it's a refueling mission in and out. So you would get your frag. The frag is where our missions for the next day would actually come down from 7th Air Force, which was in Saigon. And it would come down as your primary, your secondary, and your alternate. And you were always, you know, deep down inside, you were saying, boy, I sure hope we get that secondary or alternate. And toward the end of my tour, our frag was coming down 6-6-6. So we said, well, there's not much way to avoid this one, is there? But you would get that the day before, and then you'd go flight plan, especially if you had the early go. We had two goes. We had to have an early go, which you took off basically before dawn, and then we had an afternoon go that would take off around 1:30, 2 o'clock, something like that in the afternoon. But for the early morning go, that was always a tough one, because you just didn't sleep. When you knew you were going downtown on the Northeast Railroad or Thai Nguyen Steel Plant, Bok Gang Bridge, the butterflies would start as soon as you got that frag. And anybody that says they were cool, calm, collected, and didn't didn't sweat any of that stuff is full of bull. And you'd know where you're going. You'd know what you're going to be up against. But we'd go in the flight planning room. We would make out our maps, because we always carried maps that showed our route and what the target was. We'd highlight that part.